Barhill Records. Der Talk.
Hallo, hier ist Barhill Records, der Talk. Ich stelle in jeder Folge Musikerinnen bzw. Bands vor, die entweder bei meinem Label Barhill Records unter Vertrag stehen oder mit denen ich in meiner Funktion als Musikjournalist gesprochen habe. Denn ich bin bereits seit Mitte der 90er als freier Musikjournalist tätig. So nutze ich dieses Talk-Format, um auch auf mein Label und dessen Künstlerinnen bzw. Bands aufmerksam zu machen. Zu Gast in Folge 18 von Barhill Records der Talk ist Andy Falkus, Frontmann der walisischen Noise-Rocker McCluskey. Die Band existierte bereits zwischen 1996 und 2005. Seit 2014 ist sie wieder aktiv und veröffentlichte in diesem Jahr ihr viertes Studioalbum The World Is Still Here and So Are We, das erste seit 2004. Viel Spaß mit dem Gespräch.
I'm gonna start now.
Begin.
I had the pleasure of talking to you in 2017 when you were a member of Future of the Left. So it's a pleasure to talk to you again, this time about McCluskey. And first of all, what's the correct way to write the band name? Is it one word, all letters in lowercase?
McCluskey. Yeah, that's the way to write it. Although you can't get too precious about your band name. It's funny, even early on, there'd be reviews in, say, British magazines like Melody Maker. And the format at the time certainly was there'd be a picture of the album cover, and next to it would be, you know, the album name and the band name repeated, and then underneath the review. So many times you'd have the album cover, and next to it the band name would be misspelled. Like, you would think even the photo editor or the typesetter would go, oh, you've got two completely different fucking words here. But no, that's not the way it worked. Yeah, just McCluskey. Sometimes people add another C. Sometimes people add an E towards the end. Sometimes people capitalize the M and the L so it looks like McDonald's or something. I'm beyond caring. You know, there are so many important things in this world, and that's none of them, pretty much.
Yeah, well, but I take care of details. So
that's excellent. I very much appreciate that. But it's not. There are lots of grounds to take a stand on. I can't fight on that ground anymore.
What crosses your mind when you first think of McCluskey?
I think because human memory, if you're any kind of survivor, tends to just remember the good bits. I largely remember the good times, the growing up. I think I grew up rather late. I mean, because McCluskey didn't exactly happen when I was young. Rock bands are meant to happen in that first flush of, if not youth, then like late teens, early 20s. For me, when McCluskey started touring, I was like 27 years old, so... but I was an immature 27-year-old, definitely. But I remember the good times. I remember the shows. If I really sit down and think, I can remember the bad times. And I can have, you can build up resentments towards people and the way they acted, whereas if that's former band members or record labels or whatever. But ultimately, all of that is just a waste of time, isn't it? And even though a lot of people would think that McCluskey was fueled by, if you listen to the sound of the band, fueled by a spite and an anger. And maybe there is a truth in that, of youngish men trying to establish themselves in the world at a particular age. It's definitely not the intention. And it's definitely not the way I look at it now. So I mostly just think of the good times. In some ways, I think of, you know, if I'm forced to, I can think of wasted opportunity. But I think that's part of the magic of the band. The self-sabotage, almost, the fact that it didn't quite work is entirely in keeping with the band. Unmitigated success wouldn't have worked for us artistically. It just wouldn't have. And I know, certainly with the original lineup of the band, if we'd been more successful, and in that sense I just mean in terms of people at shows, record sales, the band would have split up earlier. Because there was one particular member of the band who didn't like the idea of not being commercial, but selling records. Mm-hmm. They felt like they were selling out even by virtue of being on a record label. That's not my attitude, but you have to respect somebody. If they want to you know, live in a commercial sense almost entirely off grid. What are you going to do? You know, you can't make them perform, and it's that thin line between embracing capitalism and being a part of capitalism, I suppose. Some people can't make that distinction.
To go back to what you said at the beginning of your answer, do you consider yourself grown up nowadays?
No, I don't think anybody's grown up. You're growing up. You've got more experience. I think, like in any situation, whether it's being on stage, whether it's being a parent, whether it's playing football, you have different situations in your life. You respond to them in particular ways. You learn from, hopefully, you learn from the way you respond in terms of your own reaction and other people's reactions. The key thing for me in life is, and I'm sure this is true for everybody, it's you learn about people when events aren't to their liking. When bad things happen, it's very easy when things are going very well for everybody to high five and slap each other on the back and enjoy the good times. And it's very important to surround yourself with people who are there for you when things aren't going so well. But am I grown up? No, I think that's a dangerous thing to say. My body is definitely older, as all the operations will tell you.
How did you end up doing this loud, wild music in a positive sense of its meaning? Which artists influenced you when you were a kid or a
When I
young
was a
child?
Well, w when I was a kid, I wasn't really into music. My parents were both music teachers, like at primary school level. My dad wrote like musicals for kids, you know, based around the nativity or whatever. But he was a creative person, just not really in the same field. His modern music taste didn't go much past, you know, the Moody Blues or whatever. And I just loved sport and reading when I was a kid. They were the things I loved. For me, I kind of got into music probably when I was about 13, and the gateway bands, so that were like Queen, who I still have a huge affection for to this day. I mean, particularly albums like Sheer Heart Attack, it's just gorgeous. The more shiny film soundtracking Queen I've rather left behind as I've, you know, as I've grown up, as we've established whatever growing up means. And then I was into quite mainstreamy music until I was probably 18, 19, or 20. I loved Soundgarden when I was a teenager until I saw them play live. It was didn't really didn't no it didn't really work for me. Whereas bands like Faith No More, I liked a record or two, were just incredible live bands. My inspirations, I liked all of the creative arts. I loved to write, I loved to tell jokes, I loved all of those things. When I read books or when I saw comedians, I always enjoyed them. I always thought I had something to contribute, but I never necessarily thought I could do any better than the people I liked. When I saw bands at festivals or shows or listened to records, I just felt I never heard myself. I never quite heard myself, and I thought I could do better, particularly at festivals. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, most festivals should be banned. What an awful way to hear a band. All you get to hear is the kick drum and the vocals on a big stage, and the guitars and the bass are blowing around somewhere in the wind. So I think that was my inspiration, really. I've never really, whereas I'm a fan in the sense of those other art forms I described, in terms of music, I'm not so much of a fan. There are certain people I admire, but my aim is, I'm quite a competitive person. I mean, I let my daughter win at Mario Kart occasionally, but I'm quite a competitive person. And it's like if I'm going on stage, we're playing with the Jesus Lizard in La Botanique in Brussels soon. And the aim, they're one of my favorite bands, but the aim is to blow them off the fucking stage. You know, that's the, I think every band should go on stage with that. Every rock band. I don't think you need to go on stage so aggressively if you're playing this lovely little folk numbers.
You never know.
That might jar. Hey, who am I to question other people's motivations?
You're the only constant member of McCluskey. Would the other two guys consider it a democratic band, or is it that you lead the way?
I lead the way, but it's still a band. It's still made up of the three people in the band. Ultimately, I will even, but even when I lead it, so if there's a tie, I'll break it. if one person says one thing, say about a t-shirt design, and the other person says the other, I'll go, well, we're going with this because A, I want to. But if somebody feels very strongly about something, then that's a discussion to be had. You don't want, luckily, we're in a position where we've never had to have any kind of argument about anything. There was some discussion about the track order of the album. Sorry, track order. I'm going to punch myself. Song order. There are no tracks. There are only songs. I firmly believe this. A track is
It's also detail.
a track is transactional. Something to get through. Oh, look, there's another track. A song is a real living, breathing thing. And also, I just like being pedantic. So there was some discussion about that. There was some discussion about one song in particular, Cops and Coppers, which is on the record, which Damien really didn't like at first. And I had to go, nah, it's definitely good. He thought it was a little bit too much like something Future of the Left would do. And I think there's another song on the record, Chekhov's Guns, which is could be a Future of the Left song. There's just something almost indefinable about it. A bit, it's got a bit more space than maybe a McCluskey song. And McCluskey stuff is kind of denser than Future of the Left. It's not louder necessarily. I actually thought Future of the Left was quieter, and we did some shows at the back end of last year, and let me tell you, it isn't fucking quieter. There's a couple of songs, in fact, which are so loud, I had to turn around to the band members and say, what are we thinking? Like ridiculous. Because I hadn't done it for so long, I was like, oh, Future of the Left's just this more relaxed kind of band. No, it fucking ain't. And I know because I was right there in the epicenter of it. But it's not, I don't know, it's not a democracy. I'm trying to think back to my old politics lectures about what form of government it would be. It's almost like a, no, I don't want to say benevolent dictatorship because that is because it's not correct. I don't know. Let me go away. Let me do some further reading, and I will send you the exact form of government that the band is. But if there were different people in the band, it would probably work in the same way, but it would be fundamentally a very different thing. And nobody bosses Jack around because he's usually asleep, and nobody bosses Damien around because he's fucking massive. So that's where we are. I'm neither of those things.
You've mentioned Faith No More, but how come that you've signed with Mike Patton's Ipecac label?
Well, if just because we released a single, I still like the idea of a single, the romantic idea of a single, as opposed to a lead track. Again, we're back to being an old person again. And Mark from Ipecac got in contact, having heard it. We released the single to release so we could afford our US visas. They are not cheap. We managed to raise the money easily, which was fantastic, just for a band of our size to make several thousand pounds just with a couple of songs. Feel very honored to be in that position, although it's not luck that we're in that position. He got in contact, said he liked it. And then a few months later, we met up at our show in New York. He seemed like a lovely guy. And that was it, really. That's the full story. And I haven't shared a martini with Mike Patton or had a bath with him or even talked to him. But so far it's been a complete pleasure, ple a pleasure of an experience being on that label. It's been being supported when you do any artistic endeavor, to feel supported or to feel as if people are enjoying it as much as you are, even if it's an act. Is just a superb it even when you believe fundamentally in what you do, it just helps you to feel like you've got this momentum as opposed to just scrapping away by yourself, which is very much the early experience of the original lineup of the band. We really did feel like we weren't just a fish out of water, we were a fish a long way from water. We were a fish who'd been transported to the middle of the Serengeti or something.
But your music is virtually predestined to be released by Ipecac in it.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I'm not a label guy. I'm not like I was saying earlier,
Like
my
when
music.
you look at the other artists on the label.
Yeah, but I obviously had a vague idea of what Ipecac was, but I'm not really a record buyer. I don't have any money. I'm not a music historian. before we'd recorded with Steve Albini, I could have only told you three albums that he'd done. A lot of my experience is a very selfish, self-centered experience in terms of music. It's my music. Whereas, like I say, with other art forms, I'm very interested in them as a fan. So I hadn't really paid a lot of attention. But yeah, I'd have to agree. It's in a lot of ways, it's as perfect a fit as you could possibly find.
You mentioned Steve Albini. How much of a loss is his death?
Oh, it's awful.
To the music,
yeah.
To the indie music scene, I would call it.
Well, I mean, if you look at it objectively, he was probably and is still probably the most important person in it. In terms of what he represented, in mostly very good, but also, you know, with some negative connotations as well. He was a lovely man. Obviously, he changed a lot over the years. I met him from, I don't know, I guess he was about 40 when I met him or something. Nothing but supportive and lovely and technically excellent. And you don't want to be one of those people who says he did a lot of work for charity, like wearing it heavily, but the guy did. He gave himself generously. And I think it's the kind of thing which seems to get sadder all the time. Weirdly enough, just after he died, I was able to watch an interview with him, which is something I don't watch interviews with people. It's not that I'm not interested. I've just got too much going on in my own head. I was able to watch the interview, but I haven't been able to watch footage of, say, Shellac playing since. It's a bit too raw. However, I mean, he's someone I met several times. We were meant to be recording with him last April. We just weren't able to do it. Just a short recording somewhere in a studio in France. That's very sad. After somebody goes, it's all about the people who are left behind, isn't it? And I'm good friends with Bob Weston. And I feel so bad for him that I feel so bad for him and Todd that it's not just the person who leaves, isn't it? It's the people who are left behind and how it affects their lives.
Yeah,
the next few years of their lives was all mapped out, if not exactly, then generally how they would go and play the record. They would go and have a nice time with their friends. They'd have nice food in these different countries, say hello to all these people they'd met. And suddenly, not only is their friend gone, but all of those experiences, and frankly, because we live in a first world economy, all of that income is gone as well. It must be a startling shock. But all you can do in that kind of situation is give somebody love and hope they come through, you know, as best as possible. But yeah, it's very sad. It's very sad.
Is it easier to write such songs as you did on the new record when the world seems to burn to ashes?
Well, I think you think about that and you don't think about it at the same time. You're making songs in a format where most of the listeners understand the context. They have all these different signifiers that they're used to, these little keys, these structures which are familiar. But also, I think any art speaks of the moment in which it's made as well. For me, the best art, and this is I need to stress, this is the best art for me, because this isn't necessarily what everybody needs, is art which says something about something without explicitly talking about the thing. It's subject, it's topic adjacent, or it can communicate as much in its mood and its use of language and its tone, maybe is a better way to put it, as opposed to explicitly beginning, middle, and an end. This is what I'm singing about. A lot of very successful music, a lot of good successful music, is very on the nose. It just is. It has to be to communicate to teenagers who are the engine of successful music. They just are. They're the engine which builds it. Rage Against the Machine didn't say, fuck you, this situation has a lot of nuance, here's a reading list. You know, because it doesn't scan in a lyric, and also because it just doesn't get people excited. And I understand that. The world does feel desperate in a lot of ways, in so many ways, in fact. I'm sure about what's wrong and what's right. The thing which confuses me as what I consider to be a reasonable human being is not being sure about the response, in the sense that a lot of the time I think that the way the left responds to the right is ultimately just shooting itself in the foot, and in fact and in fact increasing, in fact being our own worst enemy. But alternatively, when you see the way that democratic structures have in essence just pushed us into this almost Dickensian world where the rich, where it's all set now. I mean, the game is rigged. The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Unless there's some kind of reset, that's just going to continue until either it continues to the point of this bizarre technocratic world where people like Elon Musk and his ever expanding forehead are terraforming Mars, and everybody else is living in slums and ghettos on gruel, or there's some kind of bloody revolution. I mean, what is the alternative? 25 years ago, people were saying that London was unaffordable. There's something's going to break. The rent is too much. Something's going to break. And now, 25 years later, it's three times more expensive than that. And yet it still has not broken. So who can say? And amidst all that, the record happens. And even the record isn't a cry for help. And at no point are you sitting down deliberately reading about stuff. But if you, anybody like in a band, sorry, this is a very long answer. You're always working. You're always taking things in, or you're always working, sometimes consciously. I'm like a lion ready to pounce on anything anybody says as a song title. That's a good song title. But subconsciously, if you're watching TV or whatever, or reading, you're processing language in your head, and that comes out in rehearsals or maybe when you're writing lyrics. It's very difficult, even when you're trying to be funny, not to be affected by those things, I think.
What are your general means to avoid mental instability or to keep your mental health up? And what do you do to distract yourself from too much negativity all around?
I think, the first thing there is to become somewhat self-aware. To understand the person that you are yourself. I have certain obsessions and triggers. I've going through a diagnosis for something at the minute, which makes perfect, without going into detail, which makes perfect sense. And not a serious thing, but about the way I process things mentally makes complete sense. It's not necessarily an excuse, but it helps you to frame the way you can react to things yourself and maybe gives you pause. I think it's all about living in the moment when you can. And also I have a principle where I don't worry about anything at night. You in the as I'm a night person, I'm a night owl. If I had my way, if I didn't have a kid, I'd be going to bed at 7 o'clock, 7 a.m. every morning. I love the night in general, I love the adventure, I love the stillness of the night. So I'm not going to break into a Whitesnake song or something, but I really do. I prosper there, I really prosper in those times, even though I'm now objectively an older musician. But problems at night are always more, and there's no immediate solution. That person you've got to call, that those sums you've got to do, the thing you've got to write. There's no solution then. The solution, this give yourself daylight, give yourself fresh air, and take it in. It sounds like a very basic thing. I'm not about to turn into Russell fucking Brand or whatever, but that is a basic thing which certainly works. It certainly works for me. And I exercise a lot. Exercise is fundamental to not feeling bad about just about yourself physically. And I'm very much I'm determined by my environment. Everything needs to be tidy. I need a new bag to arrange things in. Yeah, I've got problems, but not any of those extreme problems which means you end up getting a tattoo on your eye or go to prison. So I think I'm going to be all right. Also, my daughter is the greatest person on planet Earth. And I've got to say this, she parents me as much as I parent
Yeah, I know the feeling.
her.
Back to McCluskey. How did it feel to record new songs after such a long time again? Was there a total different approach to compared back in the days, at least for you and Eccleston?
Not really. I mean, the same basic principle. Obviously, you don't have world famous recording engineer Steve Albini there. We have our friend Anthony Chapman, who is not world famous, but probably, I was about to say, deserves to be. But being world famous actually sounds like a horrendous experience. Imagine if people cared about what you said about everything. It would be awful.
Yeah.
Imagine that level of attention. I genuinely would not want it. It was easy, you know, write the songs, just play them live in the room. Sometimes keep the guitar, sometimes redo the guitar if the sound wasn't good. It's as much about the sound, and I think the record sounds great, but it's also about the performances that you capture. That runs through from Steve Albini to Ann Chapman to anybody else we've recorded with. Sometimes a knock. A recording whose fidelity isn't the best, as long as you've got the performance there, the magic of that moment, it's all about that moment. But the recording process was easy. I mean, we were in the actual studio for just under 7 days, and then there was several days of mixing, which now, in the with thanks to the modern wonders of the modern world, you can basically just do online. And so it was just easy. The only thing which wasn't easy about it was we didn't have as much time to devote to it as we would have liked. But I think, like in any situation, you work to your limitations, and sometimes it's those limitations which can make things special. It doesn't seem that way, but if you add in more time, if you add in more options, then sometimes you get this decision paralysis almost. This is a song. This is what we sound like. I'm also I'm also a big believer in deadlines. The artistic, for very much want of a better term, brain doesn't work very well with deadlines. But that's the problem. You need to give yourself deadlines, and you need to respect the deadlines, apart from when you don't. But it's very important that focus on something. I've known some very incredibly talented musicians who couldn't give themselves deadlines, and as a result, they didn't get anything fucking done. You know, ultimately, you can be as talented as you like. If you don't get shit done, then you haven't done anything.
True. One of my favorite tracks on your new album is Kafkaesque novelist Franz Kafka. What is the song all about?
The song is about, there was a news story here a few years ago. There was a BBC news presenter called Hugh Edwards, who was at, I'm speaking at the time, accused of well, several things: grooming a young man, sending pictures or receiving pictures or whatever. In the end, he was convicted. I think he received a suspended prison sentence. The exact conviction, involving images of underage boys. Not very underage, but that's almost besides the point, isn't it? I'm just saying to give some context. I'm certainly not allowing that, approving of that behavior in any way. A person should be severely censored or imprisoned for that kind of behavior. That's not the point. The point of what was really interesting to me was when the story came out about how different people reacted to the story depending on what their political positions were, in the sense that people on the right were like, see, we told you the BBC was rotten. We told you they were all, corrupt and debauched. And there's always there's always that, even if it's not said out loud, the homophobia is doing a lot of work in the background there. People on the left, this guy's one of us, in a sense. No, it must be a mistake. Don't, you know, don't. Don't come down on somebody just for being like gay, because there was definitely a lot of the early media coverage of it. They're playing up the gay angle a lot more than, frankly, the story is abuse. The gay part isn't immaterial; it's a factor, but it's not the story. And it was just incredibly interesting to me how people took up those positions without having any of the facts. That's largely what that song's about. It's about taking a position based on your own cognitive biases. without having any of the facts. So, sorry, that's actually for one of our songs. That's actually a very full and truthful explanation. Ask me about some of the other songs, and I'll just roll a dice and Google the words and go, maybe it's about, I don't know.
Okay, give it a try, because next question would be, which is your most personal track on the album, or which lyrics do mean the most to you personally?
Which lyrics mean the most to me personally? Maybe Hate the Police, because it's quite a funny thing to deal with too much information, in the sense that with two notable exceptions in the last 10 years, I don't look at the comments. But I think as human beings, because they just enrage you, even the positive ones, but as human beings, that's a very difficult thing to do, to not Google your own name. It's a position you have to take. It's not a natural position. Most human beings want to know how they're talked about in, or thought about in the community. You have to reach a stage where you actively disengage yourself from that. It's not a choice to become involved with that. It's a choice to not become involved with that, and it's an important distinction. However, I do find that I think people who write negative things about bands or people online are in themselves unhappy individuals. People who search their name all the time are also unhappy individuals. Everybody's unhappy. And as human beings, I just don't think, I'm not the first person to say anything remotely like this, but we're definitely not built for all that information. Imagine, I mean, I don't do it, but imagine releasing a new song and there's 300 people on YouTube saying, these guys suck. This is shit. I mean, certainly for me, I'm very good in a, by very good, I don't mean with my fists, but if you have an argument with me one on one, I don't like confrontation, but I'm very comfortable in that format. There's something vast and unknowing about the internet. The idea that something you say could cascade through it, have comments from people, you don't have a comeback for it. They don't know you personally. You don't have any truth to root it in. I think that's quite scary to me. I'm not scared of being cancelled or anything like that. But I am scared of being misinterpreted would be true. 'Cause who the hell wants to be misinterpreted? Everybody curates themselves to a degree, whether we like it or not. You choose what you present to people. It's that Vonnegut quote, we become who we pretend to be. And nobody, unless it's for a branding purpose, nobody wants to be a bad person. But yeah, so Hate the Police is about that, whilst also sounding like it's about hating the police. And I like the idea, again, we were talking about cognitive biases. I like the idea that some people are like, this song's about hating the police. And you're like, no, as a matter of fact, polis is Latin for the city. And that's exactly the kind of half intellectual stab the band likes to have. You don't need to have done further reading to listen to our band. You can Google the word polis and find out what it means straight away. However, it works as a joke, because where I grew up, polis is slang for the police. So anyway, what are the songs about? Who fucking knows, mate? They come out of the sky and they land on us in rehearsals. And it isn't God who brings them forth. It's the sweat and the fumes in the room.
I read in the info sheet that this album, about this album, that the lyrics are full of inside jokes, bands' inside jokes. Somehow it's a shame that we won't recognize and understand them, or is it that what makes them so appealing?
Well, I will say that, I mean, I wrote that part in
Do
the
you
press
grin on
release.
stage when you sing an inside joke?
Yeah, the thing is that even on stage, you're kind of, the phrase doing a bit, you're doing a bit. On stage, to a degree, you're doing a bit. That press release is doing a bit as well, really. It's self-deprecating in the sense that one of the only times I've ever looked at a YouTube thing was about 12 years ago. And it was footage of Future the Left playing a song called Man Chasm at the Roskilde Festival. And somebody commented underneath, this is pathetic. It's just a series of inside jokes. And I was laughing, because that one song is a series of inside jokes. But it also refers to, It also refers to deeper themes. You don't need to understand the references in order to get the tone or the meaning of the songs. In the same way that, you know, say a lot of particularly US hip hop or US comedy, say Saturday Night Live, it's so reference heavy, you almost need to be following it with a Cliff's Notes.
Yeah.
Who's that guy? Why is that funny? Why, what, ask, what they've just said, that's just like it, like the format, the rather lazy format of like a Family Guy sketch. That's just like insert name of person. Audience laugh because they know who that person is. They know what it refers to. That to me is an inside joke just on a fucking national scale. Mm-hmm. I don't think that accusation could be put to our music. However, I've seen it put. So in the press release, let's get the joke in at our own expense first to disarm the person with that. I realize I'm talking a lot with my hands today. I've become very French and I like it. There are some inside jokes, but I would hope still communicating despite that.
Last one. How excited are you to present the new songs live soon?
Very excited, but also excited by the challenge of it, because a lot of those old songs are so much coded into them, not just for the audience, but for us. So the nostalgia brings you to the show. Hello, nostalgia is bringing me to this show. This will be cool. But we've got to do something else other than nostalgia. And those new songs, they don't have a handicap like in golf. You can't go, well, it's like, you know, when you say with a band, you go, oh, they recorded their album in 2 days. You're like, it's an album, man. Like, what am I meant to think? Am I meant to make allowances for it? Because I think sometimes when bands say that, it's like a bit of a humble brag or a bit of a, or they're only 18. So, it's an album. These songs have to live on the same level as those other songs or exceed that level, hopefully. But I love that challenge. The challenge of that, playing new songs. So usually before a new song, I'll say something like, this is a new one, so, you know, check your phone, see if you've got a message from the fucking babysitter or whatever. You know, again, you get the joke in first, but then you play, and those songs have to compete. They're obviously not going to have the same emotional impact. A lot of people will hear Tell With Good Intentions or Lightsaber Cocksucker Blues, and they'll remember where they were 20 years ago, the people they've known, and those songs have got so many memories attached to them, this day trip they took to some fucking market when they were listening to it on their headphones. These new songs don't have that yet. And really, I'm immensely proud of the album, but really no one will know how good it is until 5 or 10 years, how good it is. Nobody thought Do Dallas was a great record when it was released. Most of the reviews were like 7 out of 10. These guys are loud and they're swearing. And hey, all of those things were true. But I love the challenge of it. I really love the challenge of it. And it's a question of getting the set list right as well. You know, say if it's 18 songs in the set, I'll be 11 old songs, 7 new songs. That's the balance. That's the balance. You know, not exactly take your medicine with your pudding, but there's all of those things have got to happen at the same time. And so the short answer is, I am absolutely delighted to be presenting those new songs to audiences all over the place. I mean, it's been so long since any band I've been in was in Germany. I mean, 13, no, even longer. I think 2009, I think we did Future of the Left. We did a show in Luxembourg in maybe 2017.
Mm-hmm.
That's closest we got to Germany. Oh no, we did a show in Freiburg.
Okay.
Our friend Christoph put us on. But apart from that, that's it. So it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to having a series of interesting but similar looking cheeses on Riders. That's what I'm looking forward to. And people shaming us with their command of the English language. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Are you a band who changes set list from night to night, or do you stick with one for a whole tour?
Not so much. We will change it a little bit, but there's a tried and tested set list which works well. And for me, the album is the work of art, hopefully. The show is like the light entertainment almost. We have a responsibility if somebody's paid, I don't know, €25 for a ticket, It's a lot of money, as far as I'm concerned. And maybe they're paying a similar amount for a t-shirt or a record. We have a responsibility to provide entertainment and fun in that time. So we would play all the best songs. Sometimes people are like, why don't you play this song? And you're like, well, guess, you know, like it's not as good as the other songs live. We've deliberately chosen the what we think are the best songs in the best running order. And this set does have a flow to it. Sometimes at the start of a tour, maybe you're tinkering with, like, for example, we did a show the other day and we kind of realized that people person and Chekhov's guns are in the wrong place. They need to swap over. Kind of people person is this great booming song, but in the wrong place it can lose momentum for the set. In the right place it just works. So you tinker, and we probably have this maybe there's basically 12 songs that we can't drop. I mean, we can't do a show without Paying to Hell with Good Intentions or Alan is a Cowboy Killer or She Will Only Bring You Happiness, for example. Those songs we've got to play. And then maybe there's songs, say from the new album, there'll be two songs which we alternate every night or an occasional old song we'll play. But it's I would say the set 95% of the time the set is the same every night. But that's because that's how it sounds the best. And that audience every night deserve to be treated like they're the first audience to ever hear that set. If the band are bored with the set, boo fucking who. Play the set, play it well, and shut your fucking mouths, you know. And that's a note to self, that not really to my bandmates.
So it's all about the details, even regarding the set list.
Yeah, definitely. But when things are right, you don't need to get that granular about it. Things are just self-evidently right. Like that works, no discussion required. If you find yourself thinking about it too much, then there's probably a problem and you need to go. You might get to the end of a set and something doesn't feel quite right. And you're like, okay, what didn't feel quite right about that? Then you have to examine it. If everything's good, you go, we'll just do that again tomorrow.
Andy, I thank you a lot for having time doing this interview. I
An
really
absolute
appreciate
pleasure. An
it.
absolute pleasure.
I wish you all the best
Thank you.
for your health and for the upcoming tour. We're going to see us in November in Trier.
Oh, you're in Trier. That's the last one, isn't it? I think that's
I
the
guess
last.
so, yeah. I guess so.
Yeah, that should be fun.
So I expect you throw each other a cake in your face at the last show or something like that.
Hey, I mean, I'm allergic to egg, but I think a cake in
Eggless
the
cake it
face.
is.
I don't think my face would flare up. It's only if I swallow it. If the cake come in, just let me know. I'll cover my mouth. I don't know. Can you get allergic reactions through your eyes? I'll have to look into that. Let's see.
Okay.
But I like
Be
the
prepared,
general. I
Nocturne.
like the I like the general idea for a cake attack. But yeah, honestly, an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay,
Um,
thank you.
and um, yeah, take care of yourself and good health to you, because especially the older we get, when you're younger and people say, as long as you have your health, you're like, shut up. I want to go to China. I want a new guitar. But turns out that's absolutely fucking true, doesn't it?
It is. It is.
Yeah, it is.
I'm
All right, mate.
54, so
54,
yeah.
you still got time. I just turned 50, so
Okay.
like one month ago. But again, dealing with an 8-year-old all the time, it simultaneously keeps you young and very tired.
I
So
know. I know.
yeah, you have an 8-year-old, or you have a child?
No, he turns 19 pretty soon.
19. Oh my word, that's a different world of
The
hurt.
bigger the get, the bigger the problems.
More mass, more problems, I suppose. All right, mate. Well,
Indeed.
listen, an absolute pleasure. You take care of yourself, okay?
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
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 Das war Bahi Records, der Talk mit Andy Falkos, Frontmann der walisischen Noise-Rocker McCluskey. Den Link zur Band und den zu meinem Label Bahi Records findet ihr in den Shownotes. Das war's für heute. Abonniert den Talk, folgt dem Talk und empfiehlt ihn gerne weiter. Danke und bis bald. Ciao.
Bahill Records. Der Talk.